Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and I have a question for you. Is your home ready for the cold temperatures? On the show today, we'll talk about what items should be on your fall checklist, your late fall checklist. And the guy who's got that information is John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, and he has a checklist he's put together to share with you. And of course, he's here to answer your home improvement and repair questions. So, what would you like to know? What would you like to know about getting your home winterized? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And John Freiberger, welcome back.
Glad to be with you.
I have the late fall checklist in my hand as we speak, and I'm taking it home with me because it'll be handy to use this weekend or next as I work on the house. But why is it important to have that checklist?
We see a lot of damage in houses, Larry, and some of that damage comes from things that could have easily been prevented. Broken pipes, slips and falls. I have a lady that we're trying to help right now who came out, fell on the ice in the driveway. A year of rehabilitation. Well, these things can be prevented. So we don't want to injure our houses. We don't want to injure ourselves. We don't want to injure our pets. We want to be energy efficient, so we're not injuring our pocketbooks. So all of this is really much, this is like practicing good defense, right?
Yeah.
We want to make sure that all the bad things that can happen to us and our home and our friends isn't going to happen.
So you mentioned energy, and let's talk about energy for a minute. What are some of the items you have on your list relating to energy?
Well, we need to get an idea of how our home is performing. A day like today is sort of a good day. The temperature really dropped. The wind is blowing, so it's a good time to walk around those windows. Mm-hmm. If they're drafty, do we need to inspect the weather stripping. Maybe they're not latching quite right. Maybe the sashes no longer meet. And if we got those drafts today, we're going to have them all winter when it's 60 degrees colder. The exterior doors, sometimes the weather stripping gets old, especially vinyl weather stripping. And what a lot of people don't realize is that with a modern door, the vinyl weather stripping is just pushed in there. You can actually pull it out, go to a store, get replacement weather stripping, and put it in yourself at extremely little cost. Do things latch tight? Sill boxes are a big thing to inspect. You can learn a lot from a sill box.
You can?
You can learn a lot from a sill box, Larry. A sill box is not what we've got with a sill box, and a lot of people probably don't know what that is, so I better explain it. So you've got a concrete foundation wall or a concrete block foundation wall. Same, but you've got a foundation wall. On top of that, you've got a piece of wood sitting, which is your ring joist or your ring beam, and then the floor joists are running into that. So that forms a little box there on top of the wall. Well, nowadays in modern homes, we've got sill seal and all kinds of compressible foams we put down, but if you got a 1930s, 1940s, 1950s older house and even some newer, you got a piece of wood basically sitting on top of not terribly level concrete or masonry. So what you can do with your sill box is you want to have R19 insulation, which is 6 inches of fiberglass or mineral wool, but go down there and pull out a piece. If it's all gray and dirty on the outside, that's not mold, that's dirt. And that means that you've got dirt blowing into your house on the air that's coming into your house. And we know that if air is blowing in at the bottom and it's pressurizing your house, well, air is coming out at the top. The air coming out at the top is that warm air from your upper story. So if your sill boxes are not insulated R19, think of insulating. If that insulation you have there is dirty, think of getting them air sealed. You can do that yourself with a urethane spray with the great stuff, sort of picture frame it. All the joints all the way around it, put the insulation back in. Or you can get a two-part spray foam insulation contractor, come and do the work, as long as you do not have masonry on the exterior. If you have masonry on the exterior, then you do not put in spray foam insulation because the moisture in that masonry has got to be able to move two directions, inside and out.
You mentioned windows, and Elias emailed to ask you what you think, or if you could talk about energy-efficient window shades or drapes. Any recommendations or thoughts on energy-efficient window shades or drapes?
Well, these were really big things back in the 70s during the, when the oil prices really went up. And everybody, there's lots of plans out there for window quilts and the little hinge things to hold them tight. The problem that we have with them is that they trap moist air behind them. And then what happens to our windows? Do we get mold or not? So if you are going to use window quilts, you're going to have to control the mold in your house first. Because remember, if your house is at 70, your inside humidity is at 40%. When your windows hit 43 degrees, you're going to start getting condensation. Because at that point, you've lowered the temperature so that the relative humidity has come up to 100%. So in some houses, they may work great. In sort of a dampish house, you may have to control your humidity before you use them, or what you may find is a whole lot of mold and water and destroyed wood on your windows. And that can be more expensive than the heat loss.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot to talk about on the fall checklist, and we'll sprinkle that through the course of the show. In the meantime, we'll take some calls. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a question from Rebecca in Menominee. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just bought an older home built in the early 1900s, and it's got a three-season porch on the back of it, like an enclosed old back porch. That has since been enclosed into a two-car unheated garage. Underneath that back porch, which is now the laundry room, there's a crawl space, and the washer pipes go right through that unheated crawl space into the ground. And I would kind of like to make that space, that laundry room, part of the whole insulated envelope of the house, but I don't know how to go about doing that insulation.
Well, I think the thing to do is to start with an insulation contractor, and there's going to be several of them in your area. On an old house, now you're going to have 2x4 walls, and then I don't know what kind of foundation you have under this house. Is it a stone foundation, or is it concrete block, or poured concrete?
It's a stone foundation.
Stone foundation, okay.
Yep.
Yep. What we are finding is where you don't have a lot of space to work with. So in other words, you've got a stud cavity, a 2x4 stud cavity, not a 6-inch or an 8-inch cavity, or like the attic cavities you'll have where you might have a couple feet, that the product that seems to be the most efficient is the one that has the highest R factor per inch. So you're getting the most insulation per inch, in other words. So if you look at a spray foam insulation that's R6 per inch, and you spray that into a 3.5-inch cavity, well, by the time you calculate in the resistance of the sheathing and the interior plaster, drywall, et cetera, you're going to have a wall that's about R24, just about as good a wall as you're going to have on a new house, plus it's going to have a vapor barrier and an air barrier. So I would probably start out with somebody who does two-part spray foam insulation, and I like closed cell, not open cell, and have a couple contractors come out and look at the house. It's good to talk to at least two people and sometimes three. And remember, the low bidder sometimes isn't the smartest guy. But at least you're going to have three professionals come out, and they're going to give you slightly different ideas and probably vastly different prices. And from talking to them, I think you can probably come up with a pretty good plan. But what we want to do is the sill boxes that Larry and I just talked about need to be insulated. The walls need to be insulated. And the attic or ceiling above that needs to be insulated. And with spray foam, you may be able to at least stop the air leaks where the stone meets the wood. I don't think I would want to spray foam your walls because we've got the drying issue. Masonry needs to dry to both sides. But hopefully that will be able to keep this area underneath the laundry warm enough so you don't get frozen pipes. Now remember, that's a crawl space, so it's got to be vented. And you have to have at least 1 square foot of open venting. So if that does not exist, you're going to need to remove some stone or something so that air from the basement can be exchanged with the air from the crawl space so it doesn't become too damp. And if that crawl space has a dirt floor, you need to seal that floor. That floor can be sealed with spray foam. spray foam is a vapor barrier as well as a thermal barrier. So let's start with that. Talk to contractors that do spray foam and other types of insulation as well. Get some professional advice. Pick the guy you think is the smartest.
There you go, Rebecca. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Katie and Mondovi, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I have just a general household question. My house was built in 1978. The septic was put in sometime around there, and it has a pipe, like a steel pipe to vent it, which has been previously hit by, I'm sure, lawnmowers, so it's chipped. But I would like to, like, extend the pipe because it just doesn't come out of the ground very much, and I see modern-day septics have, like, PVC pipe extending and then have a cap on it, and my friends at Menards told me that I can't cap a septic from 1978. But they're not always of the most sound advice. So I'm just wondering, what could I do to, like, extend the pipe so that basically we don't hit it with a lawnmower? Can I just put another PVC pipe on there just to extend it? Do I have to put, like, one of those old lady wells on there or something? I mean,
I know what you mean. The wells you buy at a garage sale, you put the old pump in your backyard. Yeah. No, you can certainly extend the vent. There's no limit on the total height of the vent. That can be done often with what's called a no-hub connector, which is basically a round piece of rubber with two pipe clamps. And you find a piece of PVC, the outside diameter of the PVC and the outside diameter of the cast iron are going to be slightly different, but no-hub connectors have a little bit of give in them because they are rubber. So you should be able to do that yourself. Now, if you have a septic system in Wisconsin, it's supposed to be inspected and pumped every 3 years. Are you due for a pumping and inspection fairly soon?
Well, actually, the county I live in, you're supposed to do it every year. And because of, I just do it every year because I feel like that's better for it.
Okay. Are you going to get it pumped yet this fall? Because if you are, then let's have your septic person just do that while he's there. Call him, tell him to bring along a piece of pipe and what you have. That way it's professionally done by a licensed professional. And, if you sell the house some year and somebody says, well, what is this thing? You can go, well, that was put on by our septic guy. He knows what he's doing.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Makes good sense.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Julie in Trigo. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I've got two questions, if I could. One is that the metal shed roof over my garage, I get a lot of melt off that in the winter, and then I get the sheet of ice. And I've thought about putting up a gutter there, but I'm afraid that would just dam up and I'd end up with the same problem. And the other question I have is about getting condensation on my casement windows inside the house. As soon as it starts getting cold, I start getting the condensation. And I thought it was the windows, but what I've read, it sounds like it's just the moisture inside the house instead.
All right. Let's take the gutter question first. Yes. Gutters will indeed fill with ice. In fact, sometimes they'll fill with so much ice they'll fall off the house. But we have this wonderful thing that you can find at every hardware store in Wisconsin called heat tape. And heat tape run through the gutters and down the downspouts does provide a channel. Now, that we have heat tape that even has thermostats in it so that it's not going to be operating when it's 40 or 50 degrees. It's going to wait till it gets to freezing, and then it's going to turn on. Electricians also can come, and they can put an exterior GFCI protected outlet right up underneath the gutters. So you can plug in up there. You can put a switch on the wall inside your garage that has a red light on it, and when the heat tape is on, the red light is on. In the summer, you can turn it off. So I would advise putting on gutters, but gutters with heat tape, because compared to stepping outside and falling down, that's fairly small expense. And to turn to the windows, yes, as we said earlier, all windows will condense water at some point. That point is determined by how cold things are outside, which we can't control, and the humidity inside our house, which we can control. And number three, by the quality of the windows, which is, can we control that or not? I don't know. But we really do not want houses in Wisconsin any wetter than 40% during the winter. So it's a good idea to buy a humidistat, stick it on your wall, and make sure that you are not having like a 50% relative humidity inside your house. There's window quality and there's window quality. Most of the windows in Wisconsin have, they're like a U2.7, which I always translate into R factor, so thermal resistance is about R2. That's pretty typical. There are much, much better quality windows out there nowadays, but they are frightfully expensive. So I think the first thing we do is we try to control our humidity and see if that helps.
All right, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we will take some more calls. You can join in 800-642-1234. Our guest today, John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector of Freiberger and Associates of Madison and the area. Great to have him with us. And great to have Dave Potratz as our engineer and Jill Nadeau as our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your home this fall season, talking home improvement with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates. Great to have him back. He's got a late fall checklist. We talked about a few things on that checklist, and we'll cover some more of them as we go along through the show today. You can join in 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Ann in Madison next. Ann, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about home inspectors. I am curious about ones that are in northern Wisconsin. The reference website that John usually gives don't list any up there. Could you offer some other ideas?
What particular area of northern Wisconsin are you thinking, Ann?
Vilas County.
Boy, there should be some in
Vilas County. There are, Ann. My friend Terry just bought an old restaurant up there. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors were able to find a commercial inspector up there. And I know there's many fewer commercial than there are home inspectors. Mm-hmm. So if you are having problems, go to the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors. Email Julie Arneson over there and say, here's what I need. Julie will turn over every rock in northern Wisconsin until she finds you a good, competent inspector. She's very helpful. And then also check the American Society of Home Inspectors. They are, of course, they're national. So, Julie's Wisconsin and gives great service. But try both of them, but you certainly are going to find somebody within 50 or 60 miles of the property that you need to have inspected.
Probably less than that. Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors is the, and Julie.
Right. WAHI, yeah. And I would expect that Julie's email contact is probably right on there.
That help out, Ann?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Before we go back to the phones, I wanted to turn to your fall checklist again and take a look at some other things. What about HVAC?
All right, let's see what we've got listed here, Larry. Well, remember, if we've got boilers, they really need to be inspected. And the ones with cast iron cores really need to be cleaned annually, because the problem is we have rust that comes down from the cast iron core and falls on the burners. And some of those burners are pretty simple. And once we get rust on the burners, we get incomplete combustion of the gas that you're already paying for. So generally, I'd say if you own a boiler, you need to have it inspected every year by somebody who knows boilers. Furnaces, you can inspect yourself. Condensing furnaces, basically, look for places where it looks like we have leaks. Regular furnaces, if you can open the cover, turn them on. If that flame has a lot of orange in it, you've got a problem. If it's running nice and blue, if the fan is quiet, well, maybe it's okay. Furnaces, at least every second or third year, need to be closely inspected, but boilers really annually. If you got boilers and you've got old-fashioned radiators, take the vacuum out, clean them out a little bit. it's sort of funny that we paint our radiators, and every time we paint them, they're less efficient. They get nice and dusty and full of cat hair. They're even less efficient. We're sort of insulating them. If you got a steam system, we see a lot of water damage in houses due to the air relief valves at the end of the radiator. Usually they're silver, You can screw them in. They're usually 2-3 inches high. Sometimes they're called very vent. Sometimes they're called this or that. Sometimes they don't open. If they don't open, the cold air stays in the radiator, and the radiator doesn't heat up very well. So if you've got a couple radiators that always seem to be the last ones to heat, maybe go down to the hardware store, get a little bit of Teflon tape to wrap around as you screw it in, but replace a couple of those vary vents. The other thing that you'll find is, I keep saying vary vent because that's the one I use, Larry, but there are just plain air relief vents. That's what they're called. But the vary vent has a little dial on the top, and you loosen the top with a nickel or a dime. You turn it to fast or slow, and you can actually make your radiators in your house with your steam systems heat up differently.
Oh.
You can put more heat where you want it or less heat when you want it. So if the kitchen's always hot, you can dial it down to slow. And if the bedroom's always cold, you can dial it up to hot. So there's instructions generally on the package, and they also have a website where you can look at. So we can balance the heat in the house and make sure that it's pretty efficient.
Some more good tips. That's great. Let's take some more calls. And John in Platteville up next. John,
morning,
hello.
Gentlemen. I came in just a little late and was listening when Mr. Freiberger was talking about the heat tape, and that idea really interests me. I'm wondering, could you elaborate a little more on who you would call to assess and install something like that?
Well, you need an electrician. You probably find an electrician who not only will put in a GFCI weatherproof outlet for you outside, because remember, something fails and this outlet is covered with water and ice, you want it to be safe. So this is why I'm not saying, you know, don't just run an extension cord outdoors and plug in some heat tape. Nope, that's a good way of getting hurt or dead. So call. You got a lot of electricians in Platteville area and a couple of really good ones. Call them and say, look, I need heat tape. They're going to put the outlet up probably right under the eaves, and then they can run the heat tape for you in the gutter and then down the downspout. Because if it doesn't go down the downspout, well, the water may be in the gutter, but it's got to get out of there. So call a couple of electricians. Given the idea of the lineal footage that you need, they should be able to quote it over the phone and then have a licensed professional come and do it.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yes, sir. Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I've got that on some lines, water lines, where, you know, I just, in the fall, I turn the switch and it turns on, or at least, you know, once it gets really cold and it runs through the winter.
That's true. And that's on our winter checklist.
I flip the switch and in the spring and no problems. Yeah. We have Herb in Milwaukee next. Hi, Herb.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. My question is, we leave our home unattended for 3 or 4 months in the wintertime, and I'm wondering what temperature should I set the thermostat at while we're gone?
That is a really good question, Herb. I was called in by a couple here in Madison that go down to the condo in Florida, and they came home and their basement was white. It hadn't been painted, but it had been completely covered with aspergillus mold. So they save $500 on heat, and it costs them $10,000 to clean the basement. So it's a smart question to ask. And basically the question is, you've got to keep it at the temperature where you don't get mold. Now, how do we get mold? Well, surprisingly, we don't have to get 100% humidity. We have to get 85% surface humidity. That is, on the surface, the humidity has to hit 85%. So if the air in your house is 70%, the surface humidity on an outside wall or down in the basement could be 85%, and we could get mold growth. So you have to ask yourself, how wet is this house in the winter? How dry can you get it? You may have to, and the drier you can get the house, the lower you can set the temperature. If you go online, you can find some graphs and tables that will tell you what the humidity will be at different temperatures. So if you start at the standard 40% at 70 degrees, when you turn that house down to 55, you can go down that chart and you'll see what that interior humidity is. Well, if you can get the indoor humidity at 70 degrees to 25%, go down the chart, well, it's not going to be nearly as wet. So you're going to have to educate yourself. And the problem is there is no just plain old rule, Herb, because every house acts X differently. Some houses just tend to be sort of damp. Older houses tend to get a lot drier. So you're going to have to rely upon your knowledge of how much you think your house is going to dry out. For just a general rule of thumb, knowing nothing, really, I really hate to see houses below 60 degrees. I think once you hit 50 degrees, you're asking for trouble. But someplace in between, there probably is a sweet spot. And the other question, of course, we always have, and this is on our fall checklist, is what about pipes that might be exposed to freezing in a bad east-west-north wind? If you've got pipes that you're putting heat tape on, certainly if you're leaving, you're going to shut off the water and probably drain the system. But if you're, for those of listeners who are living in the house, if we're putting heat tapes on pipes in your house, you've got a problem. And you need to talk to a plumber about trying to rerun those pipes in a different area or figure out why those pipes are getting cold. And that they're going to be getting cold because we've got lack of a thermal barrier around those pipes.
There you go. Does that help, Herb?
That did help. And so I'll shoot for about 60 degrees. And the other thing I do, as was mentioned, is I do shut off the main water valve and I do drain the system.
That sounds good.
There, one other thing you can do, I have a friend who has a home in the northern Wisconsin, and he has an app on his phone that tells him if the furnace for some reason should fail or the temperature drops below a certain amount, he gets a warning or an alert on his smartphone.
That is correct.
And he has the phone number of the next door neighbor who is there all the time. And he can either race up there himself or get the next door neighbor over to handle
right.
it.
Right. The smart house apps for the smartphone can be real helpful. Small investment for really a lot of security.
Yeah, for sure. So think about that too, Herb. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Cheryl in Eagle River. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to answer that lady's question from Violet County. The number one thing about inspectors in northern Wisconsin is those of us that are real estate brokers know every inspector that we use in Violet County, and there are many of them. And so if she has a real estate agent that she works with, all she has to do is call us, and we will give her a list of certified Wisconsin home inspectors, because when we sell property, we advise our clients and customers to get a full home inspection.
That is very good advice, Cheryl. All right, isn't it? I mean, you
indeed it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. A very good tip. And that's, of course, that would work for other places in the state as well.
Right? That is true. The brokers generally know at least three or four inspectors. Generally, real estate brokers don't want to say, just use Mr. Smith over here. They like to give two or three names so that they are not directing people, because that could be a conflict of interest. So, yeah, brokers, real estate professionals in Wisconsin have continuing education requirements and know a great deal. Now, sometimes people want to have a home inspected because they want a maintenance inspection or improvement inspection. But even then, you call a local broker office and tell them what you're doing, and my guess is that they are going to be professional and say, well, here's a list of three guys that I think might help. Three guys or three women. We are finally getting a few women into the inspection industry.
That's good to hear. Thanks again for that. Appreciate it, Cheryl. Pamela in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Pamela.
Hello, thank you. I am looking for an economical way to insulate my greenhouse windows. The greenhouse is actually connected. It's part of my home. And I'm looking at the large air bubble sheets that they sell and wondering what your opinion is of that.
Okay, are these the insulated sheets that are coming from greenhouse suppliers or from companies like FarmTech?
Yes, exactly, FarmTech. Yeah.
Yes, you know, FarmTech has good quality materials. They've been around for a long time. They deal with some really good producers. A lot of the stuff is made in Iowa and other places pretty close. So I would think that if you are selecting something that is being sold by FarmTech, that is probably a pretty good product. Now, make sure you get the specification sheets, and you can get that. Usually you have to go right to the manufacturer for that. And if you don't know who it is, you can email FarmTech, and they will help you.
Excellent. Thank you, Pam. Appreciate it very much. And Gerald in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, my question is about moss on a roof. Is it a serious problem? Does it eat away at the roof? People tell me that. I scrape off the big parts now and then, and I haven't seen any effects. Mm-hmm. I have a shed that's totally covered with moss, and it's not leaking. How much should I be concerned about that?
And, Gerald, I'm assuming these are the typical asphalt shingles and not wooden shingles or not metal roof?
That's correct.
Okay. We do see some damage because I'm not even sure it's the moss itself, but I think it's some of the bacteria and other microbes that live in the moss. One way we get rid of oil spills eventually is with bacteria, and you've got shingles made out of oil, so bacteria can eat it. So here's what you can do. Now, when you replace these roofs, you are going to want to get moss-resistant roofs which have zinc, generally zinc crystals, in them. But you can go online, Amazon or any other place, and type in zinc roof strips. What these are is narrow strips of zinc that you can put underneath your shingles so that you don't really see them. What will happen is the zinc, these metal strips, really sort of like galvanized metal, will slowly give off zinc, and zinc and copper both inhibit moss growth. Now, you may take a look at a roof and you'll see a zinc plumbing vent flashing coming through the roof. You'll notice that underneath that flashing there's no moss. Well, that's because the zinc is coming off of that. So you can get these quite inexpensively. Now, if you got a slippery roof, be a little bit careful.
Yeah.
Putting these on, we don't want any broken legs here. But basically, we need to have something on that roof that is going to be sort of a, I hate to use the word herbicide because it really isn't an herbicide, but it is something, let's call it an inhibitor against moss and lichen growth. So look it up online, do a little bit of research. That may be the thing that works for you.
If you have, now correct me if I'm wrong on this, John, but my memory on those is that it's good to try and get, if it's really thick, you want to get as much of the moss off.
That is correct. We need to get off what we can, but we don't want to go scraping shingles,
no.
Especially older shingles, but you're right. We can get off, and without looking at the roof, it's really difficult to know. I've got a 20-year-old wood roof on my house, and I just ordered a bunch of products, and I'm going to put a moss spray on the roof and see if that cleans it, and then I'm going to put up these zinc strips. So next spring when I come on the program, if somebody asks this question, I'm going to have some real-life expertise because I've seen these things for years. I don't want to recommend them on the air unless I try them, and my house right now could use a little work.
There you go, Gerald. I hope that helps. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Let's go to John in Stevens Point next. Hi, John.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a double envelope passive solar home that was built in about 1980, and it had an asphalt shingle roof on it, and I replaced it with a standing seam roof because I'm anticipating getting some photovoltaic cells to put up there, and it's easier to attach. But when they installed the roof, they put a ridge vent in, which it did not have to begin with, and the south of the house has a solarium, which in the winter used to gather a lot of heat. And since then, it just has never been as warm. Of course, there isn't a snow load that stays up there insulating the roof, but I think it might have something to do with this ridge vent, where there used to be only four small, 18-inch old traditional roof vents. And I wondered if you had any experience with these double envelope homes.
I have a little bit of experience with them. If you had four pot vents on the roof, the normal pot vent has a net square opening of 0.8 feet, so you had 3.2 net square feet of opening. You can go online, I don't know whether you got GAF SnowGuard or what you got up there for the ridge venting, but you can check to see what the net square opening per lineal foot is of the ridge vent, and you can see if they've really changed the venting a lot. if what you've got up there in the ridge vent is, you know, between three and four, it's probably not much different than you had with the pot vent. So then you may have to look elsewhere. One of the things to do is take a look for air leaks in your house, and you've got double envelope house. That's a really modern
house.
What
is a double envelope house?
Well, basically what we have is we have a house that's built inside a house. And so we have really a double shell, and usually these were had a lot of passive solar going on. So they had concrete or block or some way of collecting and holding the solar energy. Some of the ones that we worked on way back when had air circulation fans. So the idea is you had very little thermal loss. The thing is with the modern materials that we have now for ceiling houses, they've become a thing of the past. But there's a big investment there, so you want to maintain it. But it's now 38 years old. So I think that, John, that I'd probably go to Focus on Energy, and I think I'd go ahead and have an energy inspection on this house. Yeah. And do it when it's cold, because then the thermal imaging, I mean, if we've got a couple plumes of warm air coming out of that, we're going to pick up in thermal imaging. And if they do a blower door test and depressurize this house to 50 pascals, you've got a bunch of leaks that are really defeating you. It could be that over the years, this house has just aged a little bit. Settled a little bit or whatever. Seals, we make things out of plastic and things out of foam, and everything ages, not just us.
Yeah.
And so sometimes our houses are a lot leakier than when they were built just due to changes. So let's invest, $400 or $500 in some science before we do anything. But my suspicion, John, is that the venting was not changed by much, and that probably is not the source of your issue.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling, John. Good luck to you. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home inspection and home repair issues today, and a late fall checklist from John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. Great to have John back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mike in Sun Prairie emailed to say his kitchen has no water line to the fridge for an ice maker or water dispenser, and he wants to install one himself. Should he tap into the hard water line or the softened water line? And should the shutoff be behind the fridge or in the basement where it's more accessible? What's your thought about, and then he talks about shark bite fittings that require no soldering.
Shark bite fittings work just fine. The shutoff, what the code says is the shutoffs have to be visible and accessible. If it's in the back of the fridge, it's not visible and accessible. Now, as far as what to tap into, you have to tap into the hard line, because you're going to be making ice cubes or maybe water with this, and we don't want the salt. So all potable water, we have to have the hard water, so we're not getting the soft.
There we go. Let's turn to Nick in Milwaukee now. Nick, hello.
Hey, I've got a question for you. I work for a major window company, so this is kind of funny. I've got a 4-wide on the front of my house, which is an Anderson, and it's got 2 bin panels. And my problem is it's rotting. It's rotting bad. I called Anderson, and they're rude as heck. And it's kind of funny because, like I said, I work for the competitor, and they said it's out of warranty. Besides, I know how much a window's worth. It's worth a lot of money, so I can't really afford to replace it right now. Is there anything I can do to really weatherproof that besides putting that plastic on there? I've got one more question after that, but my second question is pretty easy compared to this one.
Yeah. Nick, how old is this Anderson window?
It's at least, they said it's out of warranty, so they said their warranty was 20 years old.
Was 20 years?
I know what our warranty is. Our warranty is life, but, so.
And this is a wood exterior or a clad exterior?
This is a wood exterior.
A wood exterior. Okay, so Is it structurally compromised? Is this a bay or is this in the wall?
This is a pocket fit in the wall. Like I said, it's a 4-wide. Mm-hmm. Got bent panels each side. So it is rotting really bad. And where the handles were, you can't put the handles back in because it's so rotted. and I was going to order the handles, and they wanted $50 a piece. I was like, that's way too much.
Go to, you must have a ReStore in Milwaukee. I know in Madison, you can get the handles there probably for a buck.
Yeah.
If it is really, really decayed, I mean, I've got windows in my house from the 1850s, and I manage to maintain them, though sometimes you need to put some wood hardener and epoxy in places that are hard to reach. But it sounds like these may just plain be gone, and if they're out of warranty, they're out of warranty. I don't see any recourse there. And sometimes you're best off just biting the bullet. The other thing that we find sometimes is when people put in windows 20, 25 years ago, they did not do a real good job. They didn't seal around the windows. So sometimes people replace the windows and they go, oh, these are much better windows. Well, actually, no, there is much better insulation. They aren't leaking around the edges. So I'm afraid that new windows are probably in your future, but maybe you can get a discount from these people you work for.
Maybe.
My other quick question for you is, we had a contractor come in and do some work, and it went south pretty bad. It didn't go good at all. And I'm just going to throw this by you to see what your idea was. Why would you take all the outlet and the light covers with you when you leave as a contractor?
That sounds very strange. Remember that if you have a problem with a contractor in Wisconsin, we have this nice thing called Right to Cure, which is a state law. And if you just Google Right to Cure, it's going to pop up. And basically, if you're having anyone out there having problems with a contractor, you have the right to tell them what's wrong. And then if you look at the Right to Cure brochure that the state, you know, this is a state law, state-produced brochure, they have a certain time to respond to you, and then you can respond to their response. But what the state has tried to do is, we have so many problems with contractors having problems with clients and clients having problems with contractors. And believe me, it goes both ways. Yeah. And sometimes it's going both ways at the same time. But the idea here is to try to give people a state formula for settling disputes by defining the dispute, defining how it's going to be settled, and then coming to an arrangement so people aren't all mad at each other.
So it's the Right to Cure
Wisconsin
law.
Right to Cure, and if you Google Wisconsin Right to Cure, it's going to pop up. You could, the law will pop up. I can't remember Section 204 of the Wisconsin statutes, but the state has a nice two-page brochure in several different forms that you have. And basically, in Wisconsin, if you read the law, if it's remodeling, or if it's an addition, but not for repairs, this doesn't, if you just have a guy come in and fix a couple things, this doesn't count. But for any major project, you cannot even sue each other until you've gone through the Right to Cure. So this is a way of keeping things out of the court. We're working on dispute resolution. So take look that up, and you know, maybe you say you need to do this, you need to do that, and by the way, you know, return the outlet and light covers.
Yeah, does that help, Nick?
That's great. I really appreciate it, because yeah, we've had a lot more problems than this, and we haven't closed on the house yet. So yeah, it's a nightmare. He did a lot of bad things.
Oh, this is new construction that they're building for you?
No, this is just a remodeling.
Oh, a remodel. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I'm buying it for my stepmom, and they got into a fight, so he walked out and left everything, and like. The worst thing he did was he left a 6-inch hole inside in the side of the house from a wood stove. I could literally put my head down there and look into the basement. So it was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Right to Cure.
Right to Cure. And you know, the other thing, sometimes when you have a dispute, you know, home inspectors do more than inspect homes when they're being sold. I know there's, and in Milwaukee, there's some real specialized home inspectors. I've got a friend over there who really does nothing but old houses. But you can bring a home inspector, and if you're having a remodeling project, and help you put together a punch list. Some home inspectors know the code as well. Some home inspectors even have, like my partner Peter, are even licensed as uniform dwelling code inspectors. So sometimes you can use a home inspector to define what the issues are in a way of working towards a resolution.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you again for that call. Joe in North Freedom, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I don't have a Right to Cure, but I need a cure. we purchased a home here this summer, small ranch, 1976 vintage. We knew there was dampness problems, but we thought remediation was going to involve a good dehumidifier. Well, as you can imagine, the ground in North Freedom is as saturated as it can possibly be. And we're vacuuming up 60 to 80 gallons a day right now.
Yeah.
This home was never, it's poured foundation, by the way. And there is a sump. And it was never landscaped right from the beginning, so we know we need to do that to shed water away from the house. But I'm seriously wondering if before I do the landscaping, what other drastic measures, what other approaches are there? I've heard of injecting epoxy into the fractures in the floor. And I know there's mechanical ways. Can you just describe what are the different next steps beyond landscaping? And I wonder if I shouldn't go ahead and do that first before I do the landscaping, or if I'm going to end up landscaping and then having to tear that back out in the long run to do whatever excavation has to be done to make it right. And we need to make it right. We downsized significantly with this home, counting on the basement being usable space. So we're willing to do what it takes.
Okay. Well, you're really asking two questions without knowing it. We've got two sources of water that come into houses, and landscaping is how we manage our surface water. So we don't have that water running up against the foundation and the window wells. And landscaping is really simple. You try to have a half-inch slope for the 10 feet around the house. So in other words, 5 inches of slope. If you can't manage that, then you do whatever you can with gutters. That keeps that surface water away. The problem with North Freedom and everything in that area, and I'm spending a lot of time out in Mesomany, is that we've got what's called hydrostatic head pressure. Is basically the water table in the soil is higher than your basement floor. And no matter what you do, you could have the most perfect landscaping and slope upstairs. In fact, you could pave your entire yard, and your basement is still going to leak because of the hydrostatic head pressure. Now, yes, you can use epoxy injection. If you get some big cracks in the wall and a lot of water is coming in, epoxy injection will not only stop the leak, it will bond the walls together. But you said you had a sump in the basement. Do you have drain tile in that house?
Well, see, that's what we don't understand about it.
Okay.
That was the third question, really, was is there some modification that can be made?
Yes.
Is there
yes.
something that can be done from inside out?
If we have hydrostatic head pressure and you are not getting a lot of water into that sump pit that you can pump out, then it's possible that that old system has failed. You can hire somebody. There are different sewer companies that have fiber optics. They can actually go inside and take a look and see if that's still working. If it's not working, you simply have to replace it. There are various franchises around the state like Badger Basement Systems. There are high-quality contractors like Xander in Middleton, all kinds of people that can retrofit water collection systems onto the interior of your basement that not only will break up the hydrostatic head pressure under the floor, but then can also capture leaks coming in from the walls. I would probably talk to at least two of them, if not three, get different quotes. They're going to come out and quote this for you for free and discuss it with you. But basically, you need to have two approaches. Neither of those approaches, however, are going to give you a dry basement. You're probably going to have to do both of them. And frankly, the water collection one is probably more important because that is, you cannot cure the problem in Wisconsin as wet as our soils are. We can't dry out our soils. So at least we're going to collect the water so we don't have a moldy, damp, nasty basement.
I have a friend who lives on Lake Monona who has two sump pumps.
Only two?
Only two, but they're the highest powered ones you can get, and they run constantly.
Yes.
Yeah, they just run constantly because the water level's higher than the
There's a house in Monona Bay. When you walk on their cracked basement floor, the concrete is so pressurized that when you stand on a piece, water shoots up on the sides. It's basically like you're walking on floating pieces of lumber. There's that much water pressure underneath that basement.
Oh, man.
So these are tough, tough, tough times in Wisconsin.
We have Robert in Green Bay. Robert, have you got something for us?
Yes, I do. I'm kind of like a few minutes back, we were talking about mold on the top of shingles.
Moss. And,
moss, right.
Okay, moss. Anyway, we have a Cape Cod house in Green Bay, and they call it a mature neighborhood, which means there's a lot of, which means you have to rake every 5 minutes because there's so many trees. And so there's a spot where, you know, the shade is, you know, doesn't let the sun through. And we got that mold on our roof. And my wife was telling me, you know, hey, this is going to ruin our roof. And she's right. And then, you know, and then I look at myself at 225 pounds and say, yeah, and that could be like, you know, Mount Everest up there, too. I'm not going up there. But at any rate, I found a product that I thought would be too good to be true. And I don't work for them or anything. I sell industrial couplings. And it was called Wet and Forget Moss, Mold, Mildew, Algae, Stain Remover. And it comes in like a concentrate, and then you put it in a sprayer, and then you send one of my kids up there that weighs like 110 pounds and let him spray it. And at first, it doesn't really work. You're thinking you got gypped because it's not like brushing your teeth where you just brush, you know, all of a sudden the green stuff's gone. You spray it on there, and then like a week or two goes by, and then another, like a few more weeks, and then lo and behold, it starts to die. And then all of a sudden, when it's really dead, it's dead. Yeah. And then the rain comes down and just washes it away. And then just in case it was like a fluke, my neighbors got a.
And they did the same thing. We're out of time here, Robert, unfortunately. But it sounds we wrote down the name of that. We'll bring it up after we take a look at the news and weather. John Freiberger, our guest today. He'll be back right after this quick look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at home improvement with John Freiberger, a Wisconsin registered home inspector. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, consults on all kinds of restoration and adaptive reuse of old homes and other structures. Great to have him with us. And certainly, if you have a home maintenance or repair question, I hope you'll join in. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. You know, Nathan in New Auburn's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Nathan. Thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
My question is, how do you eliminate ice dams from happening on a roof?
Good insulation and good venting. Basically, we do not get ice dams unless the snow on your roof melts. So if we can keep your attic cold enough, below 32 degrees, the snow is not going to melt and you're never going to have an ice dam. So you need to check, see what your insulation levels. The Uniform Dwelling Code at this point, if you're building a new house or putting on an addition, is going to say you have to have R49. Most older houses are R38, R30, R18. Some of them are R0. And we are suggesting R60. The other thing that you need to do is you need to look at air sealing, because 40% of the heat loss in older homes is due to air moving up through the house into the attic. So somebody can have tremendous insulation in the attic, but if air is blowing through it, you're still going to have a warm attic and melt the snow off the roof. The other thing we need to take a look at is venting, is we need to have low venting for air to come in and high venting for warm air to go out, because we're always going to have some heat getting into the attic from your conditioned space, so we want to remove it. And how old a house do you own, Nathan?
Well, the problem is it's a manufactured home, so it doesn't have good insulation to begin with.
All right. Does it have cathedral ceilings like many manufactured homes?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Does it have an old roof?
It does.
Good.
It's 20 years old now.
Good. Excellent. All right. So we actually have a public radio sponsor, Kurt Building Systems, here in Wisconsin, KURT. If you go to their website, you will see energy panels. And we have fitted these on many mid-century modern houses with cathedral ceilings where we did not, you know, we couldn't insulate on the inside. So we insulate it on the outside. And basically, when you remove your roof, you can overlay with these vented panels. In many cases, you can improve the venting of the roof, and you can improve the insulation just mightily. And you will have to find a contractor you can work with. Generally, most roofing contractors know how to use these panels. But you can retrofit this house so it is as good as a brand new house, both as far as insulation and as far as venting. And you should be able to 100% get rid of those ice dams.
All right. There you go. Does that help, Kurt? Or Nathan, I'm sorry.
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Barbara in Appleton will go to you next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question on in-floor heating. The lower level of my home is all in-floor heating, which is awesome. My question concerns those switches, those levers that go to different rooms downstairs, the family room, the bedrooms, the shop area. There's an area under the garage that's open. Okay. My question is, those little handles that you open, if it's they open it all the way down, that means that it's open completely, you know, if it's up and down, vertical.
Okay.
But you can turn them so they're halfway. What effect does turning those little levers have? Like, maybe I don't want the storage area to have as much heat as the family room. Why would you want those?
And that's electric. Is that electric heat, by the way?
It's water.
It's a hydronic
water
system.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
It is water, right. But there's electric that's making it work.
Right. There's an electric pump that is pumping the warm water. So you've got a hot water boiler, and that is producing 120, 130 degree water, which is being pumped through. Is this an old copper system?
This is an old copper system. It is... I'm going to look. There is a copper pipe. There is a copper pipe, but then the other ones, there's only one pump. I know today
right. We
use more than one pump.
Yes.
Or we could have had more than one pump, but mine's only one pump. And those orange ones look like they're more of a, they're not copper. But there, yes, there is copper on this.
Okay. I'm going to suggest that you talk to an Appleton heating contractor who knows hydronic systems. Hydronic systems are really complicated, and old ones have a lot of issues. The ones in steel pipes have almost all failed at this point. We're having some problems with copper, depending upon the thickness of the copper, with actually erosion. And so we may find that it is that your system is going to last longer if it's copper, if you can modulate the flow. However, the type of valve can make a difference, because you can end up with certain types of valve as getting, how is it called, cavitation. Basically, you're getting some issues with the water that can erode things around the valve. So I think this is one we can't really diagnose on the air, and I want to send you to somebody who really knows what they're doing. The other thing that you may be able to do with the system is, you have valves, you can change those valves out to thermostatically controlled valves so that you don't have to run around turning them on and off. You can dial in different heat levels for different rooms, and that it'll all be automatic.
But she should go to, again, where would you go?
Well, I would call in Appleton and talk to some of the HVAC contractors.
Okay.
And find out who does in-floor hydronic systems and really knows them. A lot of heating guys only do forced air now. And I mean, finding somebody in some areas to do steam is really difficult, because we just don't put it in anymore. But there should be enough people. Appleton's a big area. We're going to find a couple of people up there who really know what's going on, and we may be able to retrofit the system to make it quite a bit more efficient.
There you go. Good luck, Barbara. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Helen in North Central Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I have a question about the sill boxes you were talking about before. What if I don't have any? Mine are filled up with rock. I have a 2-foot stone wall.
Oh, certainly.
And the floor joists
right.
are built right into it.
Yep. You have what's called nogging, and you do not want to put a vapor barrier over that at all. Basically, you have to pretty much leave that the way it is. The only way to really insulate those systems or to decrease the heat loss is by what you do with soil on the exterior. But I don't want to cover them either on the interior or the exterior, because it's so important that old stone and lime-based mortar can breathe to the outside. So look at other places in your house. Generally, on an old house, your worst heat loss is going to be in the attic. And again, if we start with a energy inspection, we go to Focus on Energy and find people in your area, a pressure door test, depressurizing the house to 50 pascals to see how many air changes you have per hour, is going to give you a lot of information. We've had old farmhouses where we could not get it down to 50 pascals. They leaked that much. So your sill boxes may simply not be that much of an issue compared to other things in the house.
And where does she go to get that?
For Focus on Energy is the place to take a look. And I try to find a guy who's independent or a woman who's independent, not somebody who's working for an insulation company. And yeah. I really want to ask about air changes, because the longer I'm in this and I'm working on retrofitting on old houses, I'm finding that air changes are really our problem.
Good luck, Helen. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Does that help?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Ben in Madison emailed to say he's got a 1928 bungalow with some settling and very squeaky floors. He's wondering if you can make a recommendation on how to diagnose and correct some of the settling or support issues, and recommend how to fix old squeaky hardwood floors.
Well, that's a tough question. There's a lot in there. The age of Ben's house is something that we'd really need to know, and its condition.
1928.
Okay. And is it a little light-built bungalow with not really enough wood in it? You're going to need to start with some professional help. And that can be a contractor who knows something about home structures. It can be a home inspector who knows something about structures. It can be a licensed professional engineer who does structural work, or it can be an architect. But I think what you want to do is review the house. Now, to save money on your professional help costs money. So go out to the office supply store and get some of that quarter-inch grid paper. Whole paper is just quarter-inch grid. Then measure your house. Measure the basement. Measure all the floors. It's real easy. Scale it out, quarter-inch per foot, half-inch per foot. Locate the main beams, and you're going to have two or three pages of plans. So when you bring in an engineer or inspector, an architect, they're not going to have to run around and measure. They can look at it. And a lot of the things we find in old houses with structural issues are just plain obvious. And the first thing we always do is say, go get a plan made. There are also people around Madison who will go out and measure your home for you. That's all they do. They're basically, mm-hmm. they're draftspeople. So they are very inexpensive compared to having an engineer do it. If you want referrals on that, I could be emailed at frei@chorus.net, and I can refer you to some people who would be able to help you, Ben.
And just the old squeaky floors, is there a common way to fix old squeaky wood floors?
You will never get all of the squeaks out, but if we have the floors moving, that is, the floors are no longer level, if they're bowed up over the main beams, if they're sunk in the middle because of deflection in the joists, yeah, they're going to move more. The flatter we get our floors, the better. Now, some old floors had tar paper between the subfloor and the hardwood. Some of them had rosin paper, which is really great. The quiet ones had rosin paper, so it's almost like they had a lubricant between them. Some of the really old ones had asbestos paper.
Wow.
And what you have between the floors can make a big difference. I've seen houses with 4,000 shims driven into the basement under the floor, and the floor still squeaked. So
oh,
the structure,
boy.
Let's start with the structural issues. Some repair on the structures may help with the floor. Most people who are going to know how to fix structure are going to at least have some opinions on wood floors and making them a little quieter. But remember, this is Wisconsin. 100% humidity in the summer, 5% in the winter, and our houses go from 20 to 80, and wood changes. So there is no such thing as ever getting rid of squeaking in floor if we've got wood floors.
On to Matt in Spring Green. Hi, Matt.
Hi, I just wanted to follow up a little bit on your leaky basement talk. We have a 100-year-old house built into kind of a sandstone hill, so I got a sandy loam soil. It's a stone foundation. When the floor was poured in the basement later, they came up the walls, I don't know, about 18 inches. It looks like it was all poured at one time, but I was having a lot of water in the basement, so I cut out the concrete. I dug down about 14 inches and put in washstone and drain tile and a sump pump and all that. And it's everything has worked good until about a month ago when the bottom fall out. And I've got I've got water, what seems to be coming in right at the junction of the wall. And it's not much, it's just a steady trickle consistently. So I guess I have two questions. One question is, when I dug in my drain tile, I was concerned that there was probably no footing or anything underneath that stone wall. So I came out like about 2 feet, and that's where I dug my drain tile in. And so I didn't know if maybe I should have put it all the way up against the wall. I just was concerned about, you know, if I'd cause any settling or anything like that. And I guess I wasn't sure when, at what point do I need to excavate behind that wall and start thinking about putting drain tile or something on the outside.
Yeah. You were very wise to stay in from that wall, because that wall did have a footing. It's called a Welsh footing, which basically is they threw a bunch of stones and then they built on top of it, and they didn't mortar those stones together. That was typical for the period. Even Frank Lloyd Wright used it. Jacob's Two House in Madison has Welsh footings rather than poured concrete underneath those huge stone walls that support the roof. So basically what you're probably having is you've got a little hydrostatic head pressure. Maybe the rain will go back to normal and it'll simply stop. You are probably never going to excavate next to that house. We excavated next to the Springhouse Tavern many years ago because of some very severe water problems in the basement there. And what we did is, I think we were able to get down about 4 feet. But at some point, we have to remember that these old walls, that lime mortar has just deteriorated due to tannic acids in the soil. And sometimes what you've got really on the outside of your walls, you've got stacked loose stone. If you dig down there, your foundation's going to collapse. So I would do what you can on the surface water, though you probably have hydrostatic head pressure. This is probably like my basement, a stone basement, unfinished, yeah. Little bit of storage, and
That's
gets
all
wet.
There is.
So what? Run the dehumidifier and live with it, because I think you've done all the things that you can reasonably do.
There you go, Matt. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave in Minocqua, thank you for calling.
Yeah, Larry, thank you for accepting my call. I got in kind of late, so I don't know the gentleman's guest name here, but I just wanted to ask him. A couple years ago, I read in Consumer Reports about solar shingles. And in the winter of 2013-2014, my house took a beating on the roof. I had to get up there 4 times to remove snow. We had probably, in that one winter year, we had about 12 feet of snow here. And I had to get up on the roof and clear it off. But the southern and western exposures of the roof developed ice, anywhere from a couple inches to maybe even a half a foot thick of ice on there because it was slow to go. And the shingles kind of curled up. They turned up. Now, my wife was afraid the roof would leak, but I explained to her there's some tar below that, you know, that's not going to leak right away. But I wanted to ask you, is there anywhere in Wisconsin where I could get solar shingles?
Solar shingles. Would that be a good investment?
Well, no. Not in Minocqua, and not with the snow that we get up there. That is really the problem. We're going to have solar paint pretty shortly. I mean, it's already experimental. We're actually going to be able to paint photovoltaic surfaces on our buildings. It's pretty amazing what's happening as far as solar collection and the efficiency that we're coming up. But with the problem that we have is if it's covered with snow, it doesn't work very well. And then if you're getting the snow off, what kind of damage are you going to do? I think what you've got to take a look at is you've got to have a very good quality shingle on that roof, something that is really built for the Wisconsin climate. The GAF Timberline Lifetime shingles are probably the one that I specify most frequently for areas that have really nasty snow and nasty rain. And they need to be well applied by somebody who really knows what they're doing. And then we need to make sure that this attic is well ventilated, the house well insulated. And ideally, we want to just live with the snow. As long as the snow is not causing a structural problem, not causing ice dam, raking our roofs causes damage. Getting up on our roofs causes broken bones. It's nice to get these houses retrofitted so they can simply live with the snow as it is.
There you are, Dave. Thank you so much for calling. I want to get back to our late fall checklist for just a minute. John, and we really don't have time to go through everything, but you've got just looking at what you've got as headers here, you've got what to stock up with. We've got shut off, things to shut off. We got the patio and outdoor items, and you list a bunch there. You've got energy, you've got HVAC. There's a safety check, handrails and so forth. There's a drainage issue to talk about. There's trees and shrubs, and then there's forward planning. So there's a, now are you going to post this up on your site?
Yes, this is going to go up on the site, and the one, it's not going to go up right away, Larry. It's probably going to take a month or two, as busy as we are, but I really want to put, this is an outline, really, and I want to give people some information, and then I think at some point we want to add some illustrations and some cross-sectional drawings, because it's going to take, this is probably something that's going to be a work in progress for a couple of years, but I want to have something for our listeners where they can go to the website and we can give them a lot of information, basically up. Somewhere between a pamphlet and a small book. So this sort of got me thinking, and I think that this is going to be something of value. Certainly many of the questions we've had today, we could have checked off something on this sheet from what people are asking. So I'm seeing this as sort of the start to something that I can develop for our listeners and make available to people for free.
Well, you already have your website up with a good start on it. I was on it today, and I'm looking at it. It's called educatedhomeowner.net, educatedhomeowner, all one word, .net. And you've got some, you know, things that we've talked about in the past on the program that I think would be really helpful for people.
That is the purpose. The website is there for information purposes only. It is not to find more work or anything like that. And Larry, frankly, we've only put up half of what we have at this point.
Yeah.
So this winter, when things slow down a little bit, Eden and I will get back together and we will put up more things. So basically, if you have a question about masonry, go to the website, click on masonry. You want to find the lime mortar for fixing those old stone walls, click on that. It's all downloadable and it is all free.
William had a question here that I think we can answer in the time we have left. Should a potential home buyer use a home inspector to inspect a home for sale before making an offer, or does he or she have to do the inspection after making an offer and having it accepted?
In this insane market, Larry, where there are bidding wars on houses, we've been hired quite a bit this last year to do pre-offer inspections for buyers, because basically they wanted to come in and say it's a cash offer and the inspection's already done. So that can work. The market is so crazy in some parts of the state for real estate right now that seems to be something that some people are doing. But I know of no objections from real estate brokers. But check with your broker. You've hired a licensed professional to help you. And take her or his advice and go to WAHI or ASHI and find a good Wisconsin-certified home inspector who is a member of a professional organization.
Well, I tell you what, that all makes good sense to me. And again, your website, the new website is educatedhomeowner.net. John, it's always a pleasure. You're going to be back around just before Christmas, December 13th. You'll be on again.
I believe that's correct.
Look forward to it. Thanks again for being with us today. John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. His firm is Freiberger and Associates, works out of the Madison, Fitchburg areas, and he does a lot of traveling around the state as well, I'm pretty sure of that, to work with homeowners and others. So great to have him along. He'll be back on December 13th. Tomorrow, Dr. Death, Brian Huddleston, joins us to talk about what you should do in your garden now to help eliminate disease next year. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.